Nuclear numbnuts. That's our term here at Nuclear Hot Seat for anything nuclear that makes no sense, is exceptionally infuriating, defies comprehension, and puts people and the environment at risk, which, let's face it, is all things nuclear. But some transgressions just need to be called out in a special way. So when you hear
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, numbnuts out a week,
that is the signal to fasten your seatbelts for a rant, sometimes humorous, often not, regarding our latest sanity-defying finds about that dangerous, deadly seat that we all share.
Nuclear Hot Seat, what are those people thinking? Nuclear Hot Seat, what have those boys been drinking? Nuclear Hot Seat, the corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear Hot Seat, it's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. We're a show for people who know nothing about nuclear who want to know something, and people who already know something about nuclear who would like to know just a little bit more. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, our annual year-end special, Numbnuts of the Year, where we look back on the last 12 months through the lens of our regular Numbnuts of the Week feature. Here's where we highlight some of the most nonsensical or infuriating nuclear stories we've come across, culminating with the highly coveted, at least by us, Numbnuts of the Year for 2024. We'll also have a bit of nuclear news from around the world. Linda Pence Gunter with the Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story. Alistair Burnett from the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons in Geneva, Switzerland, with our monthly update on the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, and more honest nuclear information than will appear during any of the New Year's Day football games here in the U.S. All of it coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, December 31st, 2024, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. Starting out with this year-end update from the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, presented by their head of media, Alistair Burnett.
Hi, this is Alistair Burnett at ICAN in Geneva with our last roundup of news from the campaign for 2024. The highlight of the month, and probably for many the year, was the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony in Oslo, where Nihon Hidankyo was presented with the 2024 prize. We heard a moving speech from the co-chair of Nihon Hidankyo, Terumi Tanaka, who was 13 years old when the United States dropped an atomic bomb on Nagasaki. In his speech, he called on all governments, including those that have nuclear arsenals and their allies that endorse nuclear weapons, to join the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, and called on the Japanese government to provide more support to the Hibakusha. The presentation ceremony was the centerpiece of 3 days of events, and we'll be hearing more about that in a moment. Also this month, the UN General Assembly has been voting on a number of nuclear weapons-related resolutions, which showed how the majority of countries support the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons and voted in favour of support for the survivors of weapons use and testing by wide margins. The countries voting against were mainly the countries that have nuclear arsenals and their allies, including the NATO states. Back to the Nobel Peace Prize celebrations and events in Oslo. My colleague Lucero Oyazun was part of ICAN's delegation there. I asked her what the highlights were.
Obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is the moment around the ceremony itself. I personally wasn't able to be in the main event, but we had organized, together with ICAN Norway and Peace Boat and all the local organizations, a streaming ceremony where other Hibakusha who had come to Oslo with Peace Boat to watch the ceremony live on a big screen together with locals. And it was so beautiful, that moment where the three Kibakusha came into the room, the applause, the emotions. You could really feel that this was so meaningful for the Hibakusha in the room, but also for all the people who support this wish, right, to end nuclear weapons. So that, I think, was the biggest goosebumps moment. But gosh, the torchlight procession that happens every year was beautiful. And it was so unbelievable to see the Hibakusha again, despite the colds, despite the circumstances, the fatigue, the long travel, being there marching, shouting, "No more Hiroshima, no more Nagasaki, no more war." But to be honest, personally, what I found most impactful was the fact that these Hibakusha, both from Nihon Hidankyo and the tour that was organized by our partner Peace Boat, were speaking to so many different crowds all the time. There were just huge groups of people who were getting to hear this story for the first time. You could see them understand what this really means and why it's so important to act to end nuclear weapons now.
Obviously, receiving the Nobel Peace Prize is a huge honor for the Hibakusha. Why do you think this moment is particularly important for the whole campaign to abolish nuclear weapons?
There's a few reasons, right? But one of the big ones is that next year marks the 80th anniversary of the US atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and of the start of the nuclear age, really, with the Trinity test, the first ever nuclear explosion. It's been 8 decades of this horrific legacy of humanitarian impacts, of environmental impacts, and of this threat, this risk floating above all of our heads. And it's a year that really will get a lot of media attention. And it's a year that we need to use to mobilize to say enough is enough. And having the Hibakusha and their stories be put front and center by the Nobel Committee gives an opportunity to remind people that these people deserve to be listened to, right? That this is a moment to listen to the real experts who know what nuclear weapons do, who lived this firsthand. And that it's time to act on their message that this must never happen to anybody else again.
Nihon Hidankyo also met senior Norwegian politicians, and Norway is obviously a NATO state and under the US nuclear umbrella. Do you think that countries like Norway will feel a political impact from this award?
So the Norwegian Prime Minister did meet with the Hibakusha. And he was very non-committal in the follow-up of what it actually meant to support them. So, for example, the Hibakusha and Nihon Hidankyo have been quite clear that they want the world to join the UN treaty banning nuclear weapons, the TPNW. And the prime minister said, "Well, we support the goal, but right now we can't because we are have to stick by our NATO priorities." Meanwhile, Norway's foreign minister is saying, "Actually, there is no conflict between NATO, our NATO obligations, and our desire to eliminate nuclear weapons and our possibility to join the treaty, because in fact, each state retains that sovereign decision power, but it is a matter of political will." And what we are hoping is that with journalists asking follow-up questions and with a lot of political pressure in this year, countries like Norway or like Switzerland, where ICAN is based, see that they cannot keep hiding behind simple excuses. What we've also seen is actually in Canada a bit of a breakthrough where, in a motion adopted unanimously in the House of Commons to congratulate the Nihon Hidankyo on the Nobel Peace Prize, it also included a commitment to engage more meaningfully with the treaty. So it's definitely already helping. And I think if we use this moment as a rallying cry for the campaign to put more pressure on governments to act now, we could really see some movement, unlock some places where things are stuck. But it's not going to happen just on its own, just from the Nobel Peace Prize. It will take a lot of collective work. And I think this is where the Nuclear Hot Seats, Nuclear 80 campaign, as Libby has been previewing in previous episodes, is going to be very meaningful to work together next year to increase that pressure.
That was Lucero Oyarzun, ICANN's Digital Campaigns Coordinator. And this is Alistair Burnett, ending this news roundup for Nuclear Hot Seat.
We'll have this week's special year-end feature in just a moment. But first, help! I must confess, I'm not the most compelling person when it comes to whipping up financial support for Nuclear Hot Seat. Even after years of therapy, asking for money from strangers does not come easily to me, even for something that deserves it, like this show. So I haven't bombarded those of you who are on our database and subscribe with sequential emails. It's basically just been me talking with you on this show, when you're in the middle of experiencing it, that I ask for your support to help keep Nuclear Hot Seat up and running in the coming year. So think back on what you find here. Nuclear news, reports, information on new books, movies, interviews with genuine experts whose work contradicts the hardcore nuclear propaganda that threatens to overwhelm us. Special reports include the ICAN update every month on the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, the Nuclear Resistor, stories of those who have opposed nuclear and made it stick with Jack Cohen Joppa of the Nuclear Resistor newsletter, the Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story with journalist Linda Pence-Gunter of Beyond Nuclear, and regular special reports from events such as the upcoming United Nations Third Meeting of States Parties on the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. Now, if you appreciate having access to this kind of information from a reliable source every week, help us keep doing it. Your donation to Nuclear Hot Seat is tax deductible, be it one time in any amount or as a sustaining member, for as little as $5 a month, the same as a cup of coffee and a tip to the barista here in the U.S. So buy Nuclear Hot Seat a monthly metaphoric cup of coffee. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the red donate button. Or you can send the money through Zelle to info@nuclearhotseat.com. Know that whatever you can do to help, you are helping make a difference to the show and to the world. And that, as always, I am deeply grateful that you are listening and that you care. Now, here's this week's special year-end feature, Numbnuts of the Year for 2024. Listeners to Nuclear Hot Seat know that our regular feature, Numbnuts of the Week, is where I get to go on a rant about whatever insane, inane, dangerous, infuriating, incomprehensible, or otherwise baffling action the nuclear industry has taken that continues to put people and the environment at risk. It's not usually a leading story for the week, but something more obscure that creates a picture of the lack of logic that underpins the entire industry. Sometimes funny, often enraging, it's a chance for me to vent. And let's face it, after more than 700 episodes of this show, I've earned the right to vent. So here, in no particular order, are just some of the nuclear industry's numbnutsery that have earned a mention on a particular week. We'll culminate with not one, but two official numbnuts of the year, one from Nuclear Hot Seat's Hot Stories' Linda Pence-Gunter, and the other from me. Starting out with numbnuts about food and the games the nuclear industry plays around hiding radioactive contamination and health risks, because that's high on the nukester's favorite propaganda stories. Here's one of the most infuriating ones from Nuclear Hot Seat number 686, August 14, 2024.
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, numbnuts of the week.
Japan is in the middle of releasing its 8th batch of tritium-contaminated radioactive water from Fukushima into the Pacific Ocean. But that doesn't mean it stopped flogging sales of its seafood to the rest of the world. Oh, sure, China and Russia have banned sales of all Japanese marine products because of radiation risks. They're such party poopers. And sales have plummeted, which only means that it's a perfect time to foist the harvest on unsuspecting Americans. After all, while Japan bans the sale of any food with a reading of 100 becquerels of radioactive cesium per kilogram, the U.S. has the highest so-called limit in the world, 1,200 becquerels of cesium per kilogram. It's perfectly legal to sell American seafood that is 12 times too radioactively contaminated to be sold in Japan. So naturally, that makes us prime targets for the sale of the seafood, most recently and specifically, scallops. And by using processing centers in Mexico, which result in what's termed a better quality of radioactive scallop, Japanese sales are targeting U.S. high-end supermarkets and sushi restaurants. So if you're interested in slurping down raw scallops seasoned with just a soupçon of Fukushima's radioactive cesium, feel free to chow down on them at the sushi palace of your choice, especially here in Los Angeles, and especially on the Beverly Hills, Brentwood, West Side. As for me, I haven't eaten sushi since before Fukushima. But hey, whatever floats your boat. And that's why, if you're still planning on eating raw scallops in the Japanese restaurant of your choice, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat Numbnuts of the Week.
That rad water release from Fukushima has now been done 9 times and is planned to continue at intervals for the next 30 years just to get rid of what's already on site. If that's not numbnuts, I don't know what is. But it's not just about fish and seafood. This is from Nuclear Hot Seat number 657, January 23rd, 2024. And we'll do away with the intro earworm from now on. Seaweed. Yummy. You know, those faux potato chip, crunchy, salty, have no calories, but lots of minerals snacks? Soma City in Fukushima Prefecture used to be one of the country's top producers of seaweed until the 2011 earthquake and tsunami that led to the triple meltdown disaster at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant stopped their production. Shipments were resumed in 2018, but total production in 2022 remained at just 15% of the pre-disaster amount, which is why now, whoopee, this season's green labor is the best since the resumption of shipments and are again being exported in mass amounts, especially to Europe. With not a single word about radioactivity, the release of tritium-contaminated water into the Pacific Ocean in the vicinity of where the seaweed is harvested, and of course, no warning label on the packaging. Just all part of Japan normalizing what may or may not be normal. And that's why whoever is behind this push to market Fukushima harvested seaweed around the world, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat Numbnuts of the Week.
The saga of Fukushima and Japan attempting to normalize its food and beverage products sourced at Fukushima got this boost, as reported on Nuclear Hot Seat number 679 from June 5th. Want a mixed metaphor? You can now drown your sorrows about nuclear by getting in line for the latest in craft sake brewed in Odaka Ward, Minami Soma City, Fukushima Prefecture. Yes, that's right, only 10 kilometers, 6 miles, from the still highly radioactive remains of 3 melted down nuclear reactors, locally grown, purportedly organic rice and Fukushima water are used to brew a unique craft sake that, if you drink enough of it, will make you forget your nuclear concerns while possibly inflicting new ones. The craft sake brewery run by Mizuki Taisuke and her husband Sato has opened in Odaka Ward. Odaka was completely evacuated after the 2011 triple meltdown, and only deemed a quote-unquote safe place to live in July of 2016. Now, it's proving to be a real hotspot, possibly because not much else is open in that formerly bustling city of 3,800 people, marked down from a pre-Fukushima accident high of 13,000. Brewer Sato says, "I hope to be able to express this area's strong frontier spirit through my sake. In addition to Fukushima-grown rice and Fukushima-sourced water, the batches may include locally grown hops, herbs, flowers, even ingredients such as miso and cocoa. But not a word about the possible radiation content of each bottle or the flavor notes that cesium-137 or tritium may create." Best of luck to these Fukushima sake entrepreneurs, and especially to their customers, because all of them are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat Numbnuts of the Week.
The nuclear industry has a well-oiled, massively financed propaganda machine that keeps the false talking points and misdirection coming, leading unsuspecting reporters and even government agencies into authoritatively promoting all the wrong stuff. Take this example, and how the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has gone even more wrong-headed than usual, from episode number 697, October 30th. I almost don't know where to start with this one. The Department of Energy, Office of Nuclear Energy, wants to help cultivate the future nuclear workforce and finds that it's important to engage youth at an early age. So what have they done? They have issued a comic book. The latest edition of Spark Squad comic book series, and this is from the DOE, features nuclear energy, and its release has been timed to coincide with Nuclear Science Week 2024. Yeah, let's get the little buggers and twist their minds before they have a chance to have a single critical faculty about nuclear. DOE's propaganda comic book and animation is geared towards younger readers and follows three middle schoolers on a quest to collect enough joules, J-O-U-L-E-S, which is a measurement of energy used in the nuclear field, and are excited to find out about uranium fuel's energy density. They do so via a trip to a coal plant that has been converted to nuclear. Boy, is that a projection of future issues or what? And there's a game of dodgeball between uranium-235 atoms and neutron balls atoms that shows the squad how to start and sustain a chain reaction. Just the thing to do for your science fair. As well as the Spark Squad comic book, the DOE has developed the Dodgeball Fission activity and worked with its national labs to create an accompanying STEM toolkit to help engage learners of all ages in accepting all things nuclear completely uncritically. And that's why DOE and your Spark Squad brainiacs and the schools that actually allow in Nuclear Science Week 2024, you are all this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat Numbnuts of the Week.
And we have one of the cutesy visuals from that comic book on our website, NuclearHotSeat.com, under this episode, number 697.
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
The industry and its toadies in government also have manipulation of public meetings, or so-called public meetings, tricked out to virtually guarantee that oppositional voices are not heard. Or if they are allowed to be released into the air, it's only in tiny 3-minute snippets, and always done in such a way that media coverage, especially broadcast, is limited to non-existent. From Nuclear Hot Seat 675, May 28, 2024. Earlier this month, May 7 through 10, 2024, the National Energy Communities Alliance held its annual meeting in Kennewick, Washington. It bills itself as the only meeting designed to bring together the Department of Energy, federal, state, local, and tribal governments and policymakers with developers, utilities, regulators, industry, and academia to identify opportunities, challenges, and to build the partnerships necessary to support nuclear development. A job fair for pro-nukers, sponsored by the Department of Energy's Office of Nuclear Energy. What's missing from this picture? Oh, I don't know, maybe downwinders, Radiation Exposure and Compensation Act, contrary viewpoints, any discussion of radioactive nuclear waste? And the biggest irony is that this meeting took place less than 30 miles from the Hanford site in Washington State. That's where plutonium was manufactured for the Nagasaki bomb, and so many others, and that is considered to be the most radioactively contaminated site in the country, if not the Western Hemisphere. Mm-mm-mm. You can't expect oppositional opinions from those who believe that we should be building nuclear partnerships and projects, but come on, does this have to be funded by taxpayer dollars with no involvement of community oppositional leaders? No contradiction of the assumption that more nukes is good nukes? It's just another steaming pile of radioactive propaganda talking points, and that's why Energy Communities Alliance and those codependents up and down the line who support you, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
Omission is the sincerest form of nuclear manipulation. What do they leave out of the story? And who is ignoring the issue entirely? Here are a few examples. The first, on June 27, is from episode number 688. When Democrats finally put a spotlight on climate change before Kamala Harris's acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention last week, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland thanked the Vice President for breaking a tie vote to pass, quote, the most ambitious climate action plan, end quote, in the nation's history. But what about other existential threats like, oh, I don't know, nuclear? The Dems' 2024 party platform, approved on the first night of the convention, claims that the Biden administration, quote, is showing what it means to act responsibly as a nuclear power, end quote. But nuclear weapons were scarcely mentioned during the United Center speeches, if at all. And there didn't appear to be any nukes on the agenda during the Democrats' Chicago residency. An announced panel discussion on the topic, the latest on climate change, didn't happen because no one was there. The speakers hadn't shown up, and neither had the audience. The only nuclear reference was in a pop-up art exhibit a few blocks away from the United Center. The show, entitled Into Action 2024, with an exclamation point in action instead of an I, was a collaboration between the group's task force and drive agency. One of the biggest installations was a 10-foot-tall sculpture of a mushroom cloud, with thousands of screws drilled into it to approximate the number of nuclear warheads still in existence. In other words, how many nukes are screwing us? Asked whether it was alarming that the topic of nukes didn't appear to come up much at the convention, a Chicago content creator named Michaela Sharp said, "This would probably ruin the mood that's over there at the convention center. It really doesn't seem like this and Lil Jon would go hand in hand." And that's why, Democratic National Convention, and all you Dems who might be listening, you are this week's
Numbnuts of the Week.
Another example of nuclear omission comes from this story on the Santa Susana Field Lab in Simi Valley near Los Angeles from episode number 658 from January 30th. Safety first. That's what Boeing wants you to keep uppermost in your mind as you visit their Santa Susana Field Lab site in Simi Valley, California, just 30 miles from downtown Los Angeles. They have a slick little brochure that warns you to use your cell phones only when standing still, use crosswalks and walkways, and look both ways when crossing streets, use handrails on stairways, and always wear appropriate footwear. Not once in this brochure is the word radiation used, nor the term chemical contamination, both frontline features of the site formerly known as Rocketdyne. This is where a nuclear meltdown occurred in 1959 in an experimental reactor that had no containment vessel around it. So the radiation was vented directly into the atmosphere with no warnings to the local population. There are still hot radiation burn pits. It's still contaminated. And during the massive Woolsey fire in 2018, which started on this Santa Susana Field Lab property, radioactive particles were re-released and found almost 10 miles away. But hey, y'all wanna visit? Just watch where you're going, don't wear flip-flops, and behave yourself. If you inhale anything contaminated with radioactivity, we know nothing about that. It will probably be years until something health-related develops, and by then, we will have all kinds of plausible deniability so you won't have a case. And that's why Boeing and the radioactive blind spot promoted by this safety brochure that ignores the biggest threat to safety, you are this week's
Numbnuts of the Week.
Government regularly gets things wrong when it comes to nuclear, especially here in the United States. Here are two Numbnuts recognitions for the U.S. Congress. The first, from episode number 656 on January 16, 2024. So much numbnutsery, it's hard to choose. But here are two. In October of 2023, The Congressional Commission on the Strategic Posture of the United States released its final report on America's Strategic Posture. This congressionally mandated review of U.S. nuclear strategy, policy, and posture concluded that, quote, America's defense strategy and strategic posture must change in order to properly defend its vital interests and improve strategic stability with China and Russia. But in the entire 160-page report, the word waste, let alone radioactive waste, never appeared. It was all about the my bang's bigger than your bang bombs, with nothing about the harm they do to people and communities and the environment. Then there's the International Atomic Energy Agency's Atoms for Food initiative, which claims that by harnessing what they call the advantages of nuclear techniques, they can enhance agricultural and livestock productivity, ensure food safety, reduce food losses, improve nutrition, and win an Oscar for Best Supporting Fiction in Service to All Things Nuclear. Then there is the oxymoron Atoms for Food, the number four is in there to make it look more hip, launched by the International Atomic Energy Agency and the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, to encourage countries to use nuclear and isotope technology solutions to their food insecurity issues, claiming nuclear technology will lead to stronger, healthier, safer crops. And of course, they don't mention the R word, radiation, or the W word, waste. Instead, bragging to build crop improvement programs using the nuclear method of plant mutation breeding. Note that the Atoms for Food initiative is relatively new, having launched October 16 to 20 of 2023 at the World Food Forum in Rome. It was described as a youth-led forum, but who was leading the youth? So in a doubleheader of numbnutsery, radioactive nuclear waste is erased from a major report, and if you want to grow more food, just nuke it. And that's why IAEA, Atoms for Food, and those behind the Congressional Commission on the Strategic Posture of the United States, you are all this week's
Numbnuts of the Week.
Congress continued its winning streak with this Numbnuts from March 15, episode number 663. This is Ugly Numbnuts. The U.S. House of Representatives has approved bipartisan legislation that aims to speed up environmental reviews for new nuclear reactors, reduce fees that applicants for advanced nuclear reactor licenses must pay, and extend a law that limits the industry's legal liability for nuclear accidents by 40 years. In other words, get those nukes approved and built faster and cheaper. And fast and cheap are two words you never want to use in connection with anything as dangerous, deadly, and long-lived in terms of its impact as nuclear. And should anything go wrong, hey, there's a law that limits the industry's legal liability for nuclear accidents. Don't know if they're still calling it Price Anderson, but that's what it was. Man, some of those nuclear people just can't wait for nuclear Armageddon to catch up with us, even the domestic kind that happens on the ground in our own backyards. Cheap and fast, forget about it. And that's why nuclear industry, and especially Representative Randy Weber from Texas, who sponsored the bill, you are this week's Ugly, Ugly, Ugly
Numbnuts of the Week.
And for another ugly numbnuts, courtesy Congress, here's from episode number 667 on March 30th, 2024. This one is ugly. Michigan Republican House member Tim Walberg spoke at a town hall meeting last week about wiping out Gaza and told his constituents that, quote, "It should be like Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Get it over quick." End quote. Whatever your thoughts are on that war, the level of ignorance, cruelty, and flat-out viciousness in Wahlberg's remarks, invoking the U.S. atomic bombings of Japan during World War II that killed 200,000 people, and saying it while discussing his opposition to U.S. humanitarian aid for Gaza, represents an incomprehensible indifference to human suffering. Wahlberg, of course, attempted to dial back his comments with every bully's standard excuse when caught. Ha ha, just joking, you didn't understand me. He posted this lame excuse for an apologia the day afterwards by writing, "As a child who grew up in the Cold War era, the last thing I'd advocate for would be the use of nuclear weapons." But he did! There is a video of Wahlberg spouting those exact same words, his heinous disregard for human life, and we put it up on our website under this episode, number 667. Wahlberg is clearly on his way to one of Dante's lowest circles of hell. But until he gets there for his eternal damnation, the most we can do here is brand him as this week's
Numbnuts of the Week.
Sometimes a story has such legs that it qualifies for more than one Numbnuts. Take this one on the recovery of radioactive fuel from the wreckage of the Fukushima nuclear reactors in Japan, featured on Sequential Weeks. The first, episode number 694 from October 3rd. At the remains of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant in Japan, which suffered a triple meltdown in 2011 after a major tsunami, attempts to retrieve radioactive debris from the ruins continue to fail. Most recently, the cameras attached to a device used to retrieve this debris from the nuclear power plant are now believed by Tokyo Electric Power Company, the operator and owner of the site, as having failed due to overcurrent caused by strong radiation. In other words, the radiation levels were so hard, the equipment fried. This is something that we've been saying on Nuclear Hot Seat, and others in the community who pay attention to these things have been saying for the longest times. Now, in an attempt to fix the problem, Tokyo Electric Power, or TEPCO, has moved the cameras into a metal containment box outside the reactor containment vessel. The good news is that no abnormalities were visible on their exteriors. The bad news is they're still not working. So TEPCO, relying on high-tech modern engineering right at the cutting edge, is trying to restore the cameras by turning them off and turning them on remotely at intervals of a few days. That's like saying you've got a 1990s computer that you have to reboot every time it freezes by turning it off and then turning it on. That's the best they've got. Why don't they use the trick that worked for 1950s television sets? Just smack it upside and see if the tubes rattle around until they work. If worst comes to worst, and considering this is nuclear, and it's TEPCO, and it's Fukushima, there is no prospect of resuming operations until the cameras are replaced, which TEPCO only says they may need to be replaced. And this is a country and a company working hard to restart nuclear reactors all over the country when they can't even get to the core of what happened to the three that melted down. And that's why Tokyo Electric Power Company, once again and for a record number of times, you are this week's
Numbnuts of the Week.
And as if that wasn't enough, here's the next Numbnuts on the same subject from the following week, episode number 695, on October 10. Less than 24 hours after word got out about Nihon Hidyanko being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize on October 11, that Japanese so-called experts closed ranks to make nuclear more visible and seemingly important than the internationally awarded and acknowledged Atomic Bomb Survivors Organization. On October 12, just one day after the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded, Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba reiterated his view that nuclear deterrence is needed in an increasingly fraught security environment. Quote, "I want to make sure that something like the Hiroshima or Nagasaki bombings never happens again." But then he pointed to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, a country which gave up its nuclear weapons after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, and stressed the importance of the U.S. nuclear umbrella for Japan's security. So, in essence, he said, we don't want nukes used, but we want nukes to be available to be used. No contradiction there at all. The same day that the Peace Prize was announced, the Japan Business Federation, or Kaidanren, proposed that the government, in its next basic energy policy, should, quote, clearly spell out a policy to make the utmost use of power sources that contribute to the country's energy security and have, get this, high decarbonization effects, such as renewables and nuclear energy. The lobby went on to stress that securing a cheap and stable clean energy resources, such as nuclear power, how many false adjectives did you spot in that sentence? It went on to state that unless the restart of currently idled nuclear reactors is accelerated, existing nuclear plants are rebuilt, and new nuclear plants are constructed, the nation's power supply capacities will plummet in the 2040s. Take that, Nobel Peace Prize! And that's why, Japan Business Federation and Prime Minister Ishiba, you are this week's
Numbnuts of the Week!
And then there are some stories about nuclear that are just so crazy. You have to wonder whether the speakers are having a nervous breakdown or just intentionally testing the limits of how far a talking point can go before making the speaker a laughingstock and moving on to the next talking point to test. Here from Russia with, well, not love, is episode number 692 from September 24th. It's a doubleheader, numbnuts, this week. Courtesy Russia. A Russian TV host and Kremlin propagandist has suggested that plywood replicas of Washington, D.C. and London should be built in Russia's Arctic and then bombed to show the nation's nuclear weapons capabilities. Vladimir Solovyov hosts a Russia One channel program where guests make frequent nuclear threats against Western countries which support Ukraine against Moscow's aggressions. He said, Russia's nuclear testing ground on its Arctic archipelago of Novaya Zemlya would be the ideal location for a replica of fake versions of Buckingham Palace, Big Ben, and the White House. Alexander Mikhailov, director of the Bureau of Political Military Analysis, a Moscow think tank, said, 3 billion YouTube users can see what the destruction of the capital cities of Britain and the U.S. looks like with just one of the 10 warheads on each Bulava missile. Thousands of immigrants who don't want to die for our country will erect it from plywood, and all of it will go up in flames, and it will burn so beautifully that it will horrify the world. And meanwhile, another nuclear bomb will have been exploded in the atmosphere. Oh, goody. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin's state visit to Mongolia this month included meetings with shamans to get their blessing for the use of nuclear weapons. Putin, who has long been known by some for his special attitude to mysticism, is said to believe that without the consent of the shamans, he could not dare to take such a serious step as using nuclear weapons for fear of upsetting the spirits. And he reportedly returned from Mongolia satisfied. But according to the Society for Shamanic Practice, shamanism is the study and practice of accumulating, storing, and utilizing power to suspend everyday laws of nature and to influence and manipulate reality for the purposes of healing, prophesying, divining, and engaging in supernatural feats. While you might look at nuclear and think, that's a little bit on the supernatural side, it is doubtful that these shamans gave any kind of approval unless they were terrified for their own survival. So no, I don't believe the spirit world is on the side of Vladimir Putin receiving shamanic approval from spirits on the other side for the use of nukes. And that's why Vladimir Putin and the idiots who want to bomb plywood replicas of Washington, D.C. and U.K. in the Russian Arctic, you are this week's
Numbnuts of the Week.
If you want to cool out from all this nuclear overload, take a nuclear vacation. Episode number 681 from July 11. Looking for a vacation idea? You can explore the perils and promise of human ingenuity at the birthplace of the atomic bomb. Yes, an Oppenheimer vacation awaits you at Hanford. The Hanford site in southeastern Washington state is where plutonium was produced for the atomic bomb that dropped on Nagasaki. And especially since the Oppenheimer movie last year, it's been a real destination hotspot, a nuclear wasteland that has become a tourist magnet. A visit here is a plunge into the history of World War II and the Cold War, but it is also a trip to something more alien and frightening. Hanford is where Americans, summoning their pluck and optimism, tampered with the building blocks of the universe to construct weapons that would vaporize cities, send generations of school children hiding under desks, and poison the land selected for the project, and in the process, kill more than 200,000 Japanese people with only two bombs. In visiting B Reactor, which is where the plutonium was generated, you'll see a facility described as standard 1940s mad scientist stuff, with a doomsday vibe and a nice coat of seafoam green paint. Cheerful signs illustrated with Ziggy-like cartoon characters remind workers to extinguish their cigarettes and leave when an evacuation horn sounds. Yes, let's put a fun and glossy vibe on the most contaminated site in North America and possibly in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, who wouldn't want a vacation there? And that's why, to those who are behind this fun-loving exploitation of atrocity, you are this week's
Numb Nuts of the Week.
And now from episode number 698 on November 6th, we have a very interesting take on a very interesting nervous breakdown. In a pre-election interview with Steve Bannon on his show War Room, ex-Fox News host Tucker Carlson credited demons for the invention of nuclear technology. While some of us may refer to nuclear technology as being demonic, we're using the term as a metaphor. Apparently, Tucker Carlson meant it for real. He said it was obviously not human forces who created the nuclear bomb. He went on to say, "I've never met a person who can isolate the moment where nuclear technology became known to man." Oh, German scientists in the 30s? Really? When? Name the date. Or maybe, Tucker, just do a Google search and it will reveal that English physicist John Cockcroft and Irish physicist Ernest Walton first produced nuclear transformations in 1932. And in the next few years, scientists Irene Curie, Frederick Joliot, and Enrico Fermi progressed the science further. Nuclear fission itself was discovered by Otto Hahn and Fritz Strassmann in Berlin, working under Niels Bohr in late 1938. But you just keep telling us about your demons, Tucker baby. And that's why you, Tucker Carlson, are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numb Nuts of the Week.
Linda Pence Gunter, who regularly provides the superb Nuclear Hot Seat hot story for the show, turns her attention to Nuclear Numb Nutsery for the final input of the year, for her final feature of the year.
Well, it's been another great year here on Nuclear Hot Seat, and to celebrate Lee B's fine work, and in keeping with one of her recurring themes, I'd like to nominate my own numbnuts. I'm not sure if he qualifies as numbnuts of the week, or maybe the year, or even the century so far, but my choice is Elon Musk. I'm sure you're already thinking of 1,000 reasons why he deserves this award, although he is, of course, far worse than just a numbnut. Or Vice President-elect Donald Trump's latest useful idiot. Or would that be the other way around? Yes, I said Vice President Trump because Musk is our unelected next president, puppet master, and threat number one to the survival of our democracy. But enough of all that, because we're supposed to be feeling seasonal cheer. So we're going to leave politics aside for now and just concentrate on one really dumb remark Musk made. It's not clear when or to whom, but which features on YouTube. Before an unseen live audience of gullible sycophants, Musk extols the virtues, or should we say harmlessness, of nuclear power by describing how, in order to, quote, support the people of Japan, he went to Fukushima and, quote, ate locally grown vegetables on TV. And then, oh my, wow and wazoo, he confesses, and amazing, I'm still alive. The audience applauded. Yeah, bro, amazing. Amazingly dumb. The trouble with the super rich, apart from all the obvious things, is that they seem to believe that the amount in their bank accounts has a direct correlation with their ability to speak authoritatively on all manner of subjects that they in fact know not the slightest thing about. And people believe them, because they're rich. Wow, amazing. Musk, of course, was playing off the pro-nuclear propaganda line that because people aren't dropping like flies in Fukushima Prefecture, the whole nuclear accident thing was no big deal, and a little radiation is fundamentally harmless. This, of course, flies against all of the science, the evidence from medical studies, the increased rates of thyroid cancer there being one of them, and the fact that, due to the incubation period after radiation exposure, it may be impossible to ever accurately tally the eventual death count. But none of that matters a jot to the rot-spouting Musk and his other billionaire bro-friends like Bill Gates, another nuclear numbskull. In the case of Fukushima, many of the cancers caused by exposure to the radiation released by the nuclear disaster there will occur later. This means it will be challenging at best to tabulate the amount of people who eventually die from Fukushima-caused cancers. It certainly won't be nobody, and Musk might even be one of them, although in reality his self-centred proclamations omitted a key detail. While he private-jetted his way in and out of Fukushima, many have to live there, exposed daily to radiation, which the science has shown can be just as harmful to human health at low and constant doses. Musk simply came, he ate, and he left. He doesn't understand any of this because he doesn't want to. That's because the true suffering of the people of Japan is not, despite his protestations, why he went there. If it doesn't make Elon Musk richer and more powerful, it doesn't matter. Which kind of makes me hope he buys his own BS and squanders his fortune on foolish going-nowhere nuclear projects. As M.V. Ramana points out in his brilliant and eminently readable new book, Nuclear is Not the Solution, proponents of nuclear energy have to consistently describe their preferred technology using terms like clean and safe, precisely because it is not. No one says safe solar energy or safe bicycles, because the adjective is superfluous. If you are still looking for seasonal gifts, buy Ramana's book. You can get it directly from the publisher, Verso Books. Your recipient will become gratefully well-versed in every empirical argument against nuclear power. I'm Linda Pence-Gunter with Beyond Nuclear, reporting for Nuclear Hot Seat. And that's this week's Hot Story.
That was Linda Pence-Gunter's Hot Story take for Numbnuts of the Year. And now, the moment you've been waiting for. Nuclear Hot Seat's Numbnuts of the Year for 2024 is the nuclear expansion excuses generated by artificial intelligence. Got a former nuclear site that went under because it wasn't profitable or can't be used for anything else because it's contaminated with radioactivity and cleanup is so expensive? Well, restart that sucker or make it the location to install a fleet of small modular nuclear reactors to run those AI data centers. Known in the trade as SMRs, but we here at Nuclear Hot Seat call them SMNRs because that other N-word needs to be made evident. The fact is that SMNRs do not currently exist. Not a single one has ever been built and tested. But that hasn't stopped the AI Bitcoin billionaire class from making deals for defunct or merely old nuclear sites to be reinvigorated as new nuclear sites to power the coming data centers to power the AI revolution, each of which is projected to require more electricity than most mid-sized cities. It's the transformation of the dying nuclear industry into its long-sought so-called renaissance mode. As one nuclear power provider stated, "This global arms race for power arose pretty quickly, and it's like nothing we've ever seen before." Yeah, right. In recent months, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft have all signed nuclear-powered deals in an attempt to meet AI's growing energy demands, with Meta and Apple not far behind. PR terms are being lavishly tossed about, like calling it advanced technology, and the ongoing lies that nuclear is carbon-free, clean energy, green, with one company even calling it a way, quote, to complement renewable energy resources. Complement? Oh, solar and wind. How cute. Now, move aside while we bloated ignoramuses promote a big boy energy technology with planet-destroying potential. Lies, lying, liars. The small in small modular nuclear reactors refers to their power output. And to match one of its larger predecessors, a fleet of reactors will be required. They each generate more radioactive waste per kilowatt hour than is generated by the larger reactors. And once again, a reminder that they don't even exist yet. To date, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has not given the green light to any of these projects to go live. But that's not stopping the industry from flogging the image, the illusion of nukes as necessary for AI. And let's face it, with the dearth of human intelligence being implied to nuclear, it takes something artificial to buck up an industry that deserves to die before it kills all of us, be it through long-term radiation exposure or something more immediate and drastic. And that's why AI and your power-mad promoters using it to promote its deadly technology, you are this year's Numbnuts of the Year for 2024. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, December 31st, 2024. If you'd like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email each week, it's the easiest way to make certain you don't miss out on a single episode. The best way for us and the Google algorithms is to go to nuclearhotseat.com, look for the yellow opt-in box, though you really can't miss it, put in your first name and email address, hit the button, and every week you'll get one, counted one, email from me with a link to that week's show and a little bit about the content. Or if you regularly listen to podcasts and have a preferred platform, use that. We're everywhere. Just sign up at Nuclear Hot Seat. When it comes to covering the stories, we need your help because you are up close and personal with whatever the nuclear story is in your area, and we want to know what that is and who we can talk to about it. So if you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember, if you can go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate, we really need your help, especially with the upcoming trip to New York to cover the United Nations meetings on the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. Anything helps, and we really appreciate your support. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2024, Libby Halevi, Hartestry Communications, and Nuclear Hot Seat. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as you cite the program, the website, the names of any guests whose comments you use, and me. For now, this is Libby Halevi of Nuclear Hot Seat reminding you that 2025 marks the 80th anniversary of the start of this nuclear madness. So make certain that you take action, and when you do and you post about it, you use the hashtag #nuclear8080. Now, let's get busy. There you have it, your weekly nuclear wake-up call and the end of 2024. So as we move into a brand new year, whatever you do, do not go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking?
Nuclear hot seat.
What have those boys been drinking?
Nuclear hot seat.
The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.